Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 106 of the Alexi Sell podcast. We had, I think, one of our most popular podcasts in a while with the Paul Holden interview, the author of The Fraud, The Rise, about all the rise of Keir Starmer and his faction. And I think I'm going to be doing a live event with Paul and Andrew Feinstein on the 10th of December in Birmingham.
Put a link to that in the show notes.
I haven't confirmed it yet. I should email them back. I don't know. They did offer me the 9th in Liverpool, which would have been nice, but that's the BBC. That day is the BBC. BBC Studios Audio Comedy Christmas Party. Oof. What used to be years ago, the BBC Radio 4 Christmas Party comedy. But I am now, you know, they used to get these grandees like Nicholas Parsons and Alan Corran, and that's me now. I'll go to the BBC Studios Audio Radio 4 Christmas Party and sit in a chair and have young comedians come up and kiss my hand.
Yes. And is it true that if any of them ask you for a favor on that particular day, you have to oblige?
Up to a point, yeah. No, yeah, but that's, of course, some time in that, you know, I may come to them and ask them for a favor. I'm not on Radio 4. I mean, obviously people like Paul Merton and stuff, Mark Steele, a lot are all on the Radio 4 more than I am, but I am the oldest, really, so I am now Nicholas Parsons or Barry Cryer, or, you know. I mean, that whole generation is more or less completely gone, so.
Where do they hold it? What's the venue?
It's just a theatre club, arts theatre club in...
but don't give the
Central
exact...
Central London, yeah, give the exact location.
I remember going to the Strictly Christmas party when I worked on Strictly all those years ago.
All right.
And... I was just a runner/logger on the show, but we got invited to the party nonetheless, and we got to mingle with some of the celebs.
Yeah.
For some reason, a couple of the in-betweeners were there. Is that what it was called, those teenagers?
Was it the in-betweeners? I don't know.
I think it was called that. God, that was so long ago. And Bruce Forsyth. I was very surprised that he held court for a moment, gave a nice toast to everyone.
Yeah.
And made
Andrew
sure.
Andrew Marshall, one of my ex, I used to write stuff with, they're very, very fond of Bruce.
He was so nice.
Yeah.
And he made a point to thank everyone from, like, on every level.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he looked us in the eye when he thanked the loggers.
Yeah.
When I'm done, come over and I've got a little treat for everyone. And everyone would, like, queue up. And he gave us little, mirror ball key rings that said Strictly Come Dancing on it, and
very thoughtful.
It was a nice end to that,
yeah.
Week. Yeah, free booze and everything. It was in Television Centre as well, you know.
Well, of course, the BBC TV Light End Christmas party in the 80s was used to be in Jim Moyer's office, or kind of conjoined offices, and then when David Liddiman took over, he had it in TC8, Studio 8, and that was very zhuzhy, very fancy.
Jim Moyer.
Jim Moyer, not that one, the other one.
Yeah,
Jim
isn't
Moyer
that
was
also Vic Reeves' real name?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Such a strange name, and for two people to have it. And Vic Reeves probably got invited to his parties.
I'm sure he did, yeah. There was much debauchery.
Are those the parties where you said Who was it from the young ones was like stealing the cutlery and the silverware?
I think Adrian, I don't know, it's Adrian stole a painting and Roland, I would say.
A painting? No,
I don't know. But Roland, Roland Rivron showed his knob to Mrs. Valdunican.
Oh, come on. Who's Mrs. Valdunican?
You know, Valdunican, is that before you, after your time, before your time, Valdunican? Val Dunican was a kind of Irish entertainer. He used to wear chunky jumpers and sit in a rocking chair, talk.
Oh, Val Dunican's a man.
Talk stuff. Yeah, it was his wife. I don't know now.
Oh, Mrs. Val Dunican.
Mrs. Val Dunican.
Val Dunican, Irish singer.
Yeah, he had his own series on BBC One for a
Big
long time.
Big teeth.
Yeah.
Michael Valentine Val Dunican was an Irish singer of traditional pop, easy listening and novelty songs, warm, relaxed vocal styles. And what he had is like, he had like a variety show or something?
Yeah, Saturday Night Show, I would have thought, on BBC One.
Bloody hell. Never heard of this person.
Well, yeah, I would have thought, well, I don't know what you're, I mean, you know. Your parents probably would have had different tastes, really. But he was big with mainstream audiences when you would have been a teenager, I would have thought, still. Never met the gentleman myself.
Don't make assumptions about my parents' taste.
Well, I just think they're... I'm not saying they got superior taste. Well, they wouldn't... I don't know that they did... Were they big on mainstream TV shit?
Well, yeah, my dad would always sat me down to watch Two Ronnies and Dave. We've spoken about him so many times. Dave Allen. And
yeah, it's like
Fawlty
different.
Towers.
That was Ronnie B and Ronnie C would always be at the late end Christmas party. Ronnie C would often. There was an incident which was true, really. I think I don't know whether it was quite when I was there. Was these? I used to live in this tower block, which has been a council tower block for 10 years on Dawes Road in Fulham. And opposite it was a show business tailor called Major, where a lot of their stars get their clothes made. And I remember that. We moved out in 84, so I probably wasn't. So I remember I was on my bicycle in Dawes Road and Ronnie Corbett, Ronnie C was in his purple Jaguar XJS and nearly hit me or you know, we somehow just, I don't know. He was on his way to Major, the tailor, and we had a, I remember he just missed me or some. We both remembered that and he would always apologize for. I thought it was quite a good, you know, it's kind of metaphor, really. Also, you know, I was on my kind of shitty bicycle and he was on his, in his purple XJS. Wow. You know, I resolved one day that I would be in a purple XJS and I would drive into some young. So now we have there's a ritual tradition now where I in the 90s, I drove into Stuart Lee in a purple XJS and now Stuart drives into, give me a younger comedian.
Me?
Stuart drives into Talal Kokuti in a purple XJS. It's become a tradition now. Every year, a senior comedian drives into a young comedian in a purple XJS. It's, you know, you have to, you know, all tradition is invented, isn't it, really? It's not, you know, it's just,
yes,
you know, it's not real. So, yeah, but he used to apologize for it. We both thought it was hilarious.
You got any more Two Ronnie stories?
No, not really. I was I went to my publisher's had a showcase. And I was chatting to a very nice woman afterwards. I can't remember her name. She's written a novel, working class woman, but I got a bit carried away with. That idea that, you know, that my proletarian roots, it's all an act, really. And then somehow I got onto Cilla Black and I told her about, I was once in the Ivy and Cilla Black, actually with David Liddiment, came over and said hello. And I think I got a bit carried away really with that. And it, you know, so yeah, it's, you know, that's really my life. This Marxism is all a, this, you know, pro-Palestinianism is all a,
oh, that's all the a front. Act.
Yeah, that's,
oh,
the
I
act.
Thought being a part of the bourgeoisie was the act. Having a,
well,
not being
I
a novelist.
I got that. A bit carried away with this improvisation, really. And
what's the Cilla Black? But is there a Cilla Black anecdote?
Well, I can't remember now. The reason she came over and said hello was because I'd done a show with her, and I know I did a show with her, but like a Christmas special or something. I can't imagine I did stand up on it, but I don't know what the fuck it was that I did with her, but I think I did something with, anyway, I'd met her somewhere. And
you're both Scousers.
Yeah, there's that as well. Yeah, but she was very right wing, I think. But she seemed very nice, you know. I can't remember what I'd done with her. I mean, it's a bizarre.
Was it Cilla's goodbye to the 80s?
Yeah, it might have been, yeah.
TV movie, 1989. You're listed in the cast.
Must be that then, yeah.
Cilla's goodbye to the 80s. Oh, hard to see any real info about it. Meryl Streep.
I thought because I was the first person to do what I do. I think, yeah, you can't see like Stuart Lee doing anything like that, really. Although, of course, we did talk about him hosting Top of the Pops back in. Did we get any response about that?
About what, sorry?
Where's Louise, you know, Stuart and Richard Herring.
No, it didn't take off. I wanted Where's Louise to be the slogan of the left-wing revolutionary thinkers, but I haven't heard it in the streets just yet.
Didn't
and
land,
also, I've been homebound for a week and a half. I'm getting better. Thanks for your messages. Yeah, I wasn't in the podcast last week because I'm not well, but I'm getting better.
It's sciatica, it's not.
Sciatica, yeah. Very frustrating and boring ailment and very painful. But Where's Louise? I really thought that would take off. It was sounded fun in the moment. You know, sometimes it's just something's big in the moment and then.
Yeah.
Actually, why don't
anyway, that's off? some of the random shit I did. I kind of
if anyone at home, any listeners know where Alexi and Cilla overlapped, please send us a message. We'll discuss it on a future episode.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know, because
on Strictly, one of the production assistants or coordinators or someone higher up than me was Cilla Black's son.
Oh, right.
On Strictly. And I would take orders from him. He had very red hair and he was very, very nice.
That's good. Well, she did something right then.
Yes. I'm now reading the comments from the Where's Louise episode.
Oh, yeah, go on. We could go to that.
Lots of people hate leaf blowers as much as us.
Good.
Why do people think that you and David Baddiel are besties?
I don't know.
Just because you took a photo on a train.
Yeah. Is that, I mean, in terms of the slagging me off because of him or...
Yeah, someone slagging you off because they think
I
that you kiss
says.
His ass or something. It's funny to see the ripples of D&D still going through the comments, like even today.
Oh, yeah.
Even today I'm getting comments about it.
A Palestine Gaza benefit in Stroud on Sunday. And Mitch Benn was one of the performers. And because they cancelled the fucking train back to London, I came back in the car with Mitch Benn and his wife. And she's a Patreon subscriber, so a big shout out to her. But she
hello
particularly enjoyed the Dungeons and Dragons
Thank
dynamic.
You. Oh, no, yeah, it was the Marmite of all episodes. It was...
This is you tell me this is what podcasting's made for. It's
man, it's my favorite format of podcasting.
Well, making me do something I don't want
to
do.
No, not that. Just I like listening to Dungeons & Dragons podcasting because it's a very, very fun form of... I don't want to go on about D&D, but a very fun form of storytelling. But yeah, go on.
No, it's just very nice. A shout out to the people who shout out, the organizer who fell ill, gets better. Thank you to all the people who took over at the last minute. It seems like a very nice town, Stroud. I was going to originally, it's typical. We were going to make a weekend of it and explore the countryside. But in the end, I just ended up getting a train up at 4:30. Would have got a train back at 9:30, but Great Western Railways cancelled it.
I do love that part of the world on the border with Wales.
Yeah, well, it's quite remote, but you can't. I mean, during the week, you can get there on the train in like an hour and a half. And because I know, like, doing Cheltenham Literary Festival, which is down there, if you drive it, it's like 4 hours or something. But, you know, by train, it's actually very quick. And it does feel, you know, it feels like a long way from London, you know. Obviously, Stroud is a friend of mine showed me the town hall. I think it's got a gigantic, like, 20-foot high Palestinian flag flying from it. And it's wonderful. Obviously one of those places like Totnes or Hebden Bridge or, you know, one of those centres of kind of, one of those towns has become a centre for kind of radicalism.
Isn't it just embarrassing seeing all these elderly or disabled or even mannequins getting arrested for holding those Palestine action signs?
You see the fuckers, if there was quite a good Judge Chamberlain, and they've taken him off the case.
Yes, okay,
they're so anti-democratic. I mean, it's hard. And they want to do away with jury trials, because jury trials always set free Palestine action supporters, you know, as long as they're allowed to talk about what they were doing it for their beliefs. I mean, this Labour government, the evil of them, the perfidity. I've become vaguely, you know, we talked a bit about with Paul Holden about this guy, Maurice Glassman. It reminds me of the Jack Nicholson character who's the devil in Witches of Eastwick.
Yes.
For some reason, my phone thinks that I'd like long articles from the Daily Telegraph or the Telegraph. So I also read an interview with him. And he's the guy, he's very much, as Paul Holden said, he's very much the guy behind. You're very close to Morgan McSweeney, who is this, you know, is this kind of evil sorcerer who is really unraveling our democratic right to free speech at a rapid rate, you know. I mean, you do feel that Keir Starmer's role, along with Morgan McSweeney, that their purpose is to destroy the Labour Party, really, and then to kind of allow Farage to become Prime Minister.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all just short-term goals with these people. They're just keeping certain people happy. Their donors and their interests and Zionist project and all that. They're just keeping people. They don't give a fuck. I loved last week's episode with Paul Holden. I thought, as much as we've discussed it, and as much as we explore the topic, there's no end. There's no bottom to this barrel of just how pathetically corrupt the Labour Party is, how thoughtless their deeds are, and how they do not do anything for the benefit of the country. It's just all personal gain, careerist politics.
And to assuage, as you say, their donors, big business, the arms lobby, the Israel lobby,
and just anything to stop the left from having any sort of sway.
Yeah.
And even though that is what the people of the country want, or at the very least a huge portion of them, is just like, nope, you're wrong, you're insane, supporting Palestine is wrong, you're a terrorist for thinking a certain way, and it's like, who are these fucking people? Like, who'd ever even fucking heard of Keir Starmer before the election?
Yes, we talked about this.
And he's suddenly Prime Minister? Like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah. I know. It's all very suspicious. Anyway,
Maurice, this is from The Guardian. Concerns have been raised after the judge who was expected to hear a legal challenge to the ban on Palestine action was removed from the case at the last minute. So does that mean this case is now ongoing, is happening now?
Yes.
Mr. Justice Chamberlain had granted permission for the judicial review and said that he would preside over the trial, but it has emerged that a panel of three different judges will hear the case instead. It's due to start on Wednesday. That was yesterday as of this
so dodgy
recording. It's unusual, yeah, for it to happen so close to the case for a big change like this.
Yeah, it's so dodgy.
It also happened to him earlier this year in the legal challenge to the UK's sale of F-35 aircraft parts to Israel.
Yeah.
Which he also granted permission for. So what's the point of having these judges if you can just overrule them and take them off the case?
Yeah, well, you know, it's an assault, again, it's a further assault on our democracy by all these fucking lawyers, Lammy and Starmer. It's terrible. It's one more step along the road to fascism.
And one of the judges is a huge Israel supporter, isn't he?
Really? I did not know that.
The three judges who will now hear the case are Dame Victoria Sharp, Mrs. Justice Stain, and Mr. Justice Swift. Weird, they both have the name Justice and they're judges.
Nominative determinism.
Right, what can we do about this?
Well, what we can do is a big announcement.
call to action, blah, 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 blah.
No, it's a trumpet fanfare. The Lexi Cell podcast is going to have a voice at the Your Party founding conference this weekend.
Oh, yes.
As Linda Sale is going to be a delegate at the conference in Liverpool. I mean, Linda's, I think, a bit burnt out with politics after those 5 years in Holborn and St. Pancras. I mean, she could end up leader if she really wanted to, but I don't know. I'd be interested to see what she's got to say. Maybe we'll interview her on the podcast.
Maybe when she comes back, we should interview Linda. Yeah. That would be great. And, you know, I'm glad we have a delegate up there from the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm just so fatigued with Your Party. I was a member from day one of Your Party. I was so excited to jump on
train. Man. Yeah.
And it's
entirely
it's weird because it's been so tiring having to kind of justify all the different fiascos.
Yeah. I mean, I will just say it is a thing I say, and there's some truth to it, that every other party in the world ever has been formed by a small group, as far as I know, has been, you know, formed more or less in private by, you know, small groups of people, really. So this process of trying to form a party in the full glare of publicity with, you know, 50,000 members is a complicated task, really. Yes. You know. So I suppose these battles have always gone on. I mean, I read an article making the point that the big split between the initial split between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks in Russian revolutionary politics came over a kind of a disagreement about the founding. The founding of a conference. So this is not new, really.
Sure. And needless to say, there will be so many unseen forces who are trying to sabotage it as well.
That as well, yeah.
I don't know how involved they are and what's happened, or if they've needed to get involved. But, you know, but the difficult thing is, while this is happening, parallel to this, you're seeing a real shift in the Green Party's branding, and they've elected their new leader, who has brought a new energy that you've never seen from the Green Party, and he's very capable.
Yeah.
And very charismatic and charming and funny and witty. And it's like, okay, so he's making it really easy to just jump ship, which I haven't done yet.
But my partner, see what a lot of people have, yeah.
Sorry, oh, absolutely. My partner is a Green Party member now.
Yeah.
Thanks to him, you know.
Yeah.
And we get their letters in the post, and they have years of experience of being a party.
Well, that's exactly true.
Their letters are so nicely branded and formatted, and the editorial team is very good over there. So I'm holding out. I want to see the results of this conference. See how the land lies after that.
Yeah.
Is that the phrase? And then I'll make a decision.
Yeah, well, let's hope there's
just in a couple of days, isn't it?
Yeah, 29th and 30th, yeah.
Is Linda going to stay with family up there?
No, she's staying in the hotel. Her brother's meeting her off the train, and she's going to see family. But
that was another reason why I didn't sign up to go, because or sign up for the sortition.
Well, it's expensive
and
a
hassle to figure out what to do. But good on Linda.
Yeah, well done, Linda. She's she's doing it for all of us. And
I've invested some of the Patreon funds in some button cameras. I'm going to hook Linda up with some undercover cameras and microphones. Send her in there recording the whole.
Plenty of people will be doing that. Anyway, we'll see. Let's hope some clarity emerges. I know Jamie Driscoll up in the Northeast has said he wants nothing to do with it. And I wonder whether Andrew Feinstein down here is going to stick with it. But we will see. Anyway.
Well, the party hasn't actually been created yet.
No.
It's all just the founding
thing
that's been created. So we'll see. Like, maybe they'll finally like just go, all right, here's our leader. Here's some people that are going to represent certain constituencies. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, and there is a potential, for... I think there are a majority of people in Britain who would support left-wing policies, And even, there was a kind of poll that said, a lot of reform voters, the person they admire the most is Jeremy Corbyn. They vote reform because they are disenchanted correctly with the political system. And,
well, 1 in 10 New York Trump voters voted for Mamdani.
Right.
In the mayoral election. Yeah.
Again, they just want a voice that comes from outside the corrupt mainstream. I mean, obviously, Trump is. But I mean, he presents himself as that, So anyway, we will hear all that goes on at your party. Slightly different convocation that I went to the Saturday before last was Comic-Con.
Signing
photos.
Walk us through that day, please. Comic-Con, London.
Comic-Con. So a car came to pick me up at 8:15, drove me to Olympia, it's a kind of beautiful building, but it's not been sensitively restored, really. I mean, it needs a... it's a huge hall. It's like a railway shed, but without the railway tracks, really. It's huge, if anybody knows it. Exhibition, Art Deco Exhibition Centre, I think, built in the 1930s. And then had a cup of coffee, said hello to Adrian Edmondson, who was also there.
Did you?
Yeah. No,
was he sat near you?
No, he wasn't. He was some other. Don't know where he was. I also, at some point, I think later on, said hello to David Tennant. We had a nice chat. David Tennant was in his own room. And then you go out and there's like long rows of tables and behind are kind of, boards with the big picture of you on. And people come up and you got a stack of photos and you sign them, and that's £25 a pop, which goes to the person who's hired you to do this, obviously. They pay you a fee. And I was next to Derek Jacobi on one side of me, and Colin Baker, who was the Doctor Who in the episodes of Doctor Who that I did.
Oh,
on the other side, doesn't look like his young, beautiful. Well, he was when he was Doctor Who, and he had to go. But he's quite old and overweight and walks on with sticks. But he had to go off because he was doing panto in somewhere like Basingstoke.
Wow.
Derek Jacobi didn't get there till about 10:30 and then has a long lunch somewhere. But he had, I mean, he had, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's a very, I mean, it's, and you feel, you know, your sense of self rises and falls by how much of a cue you've got. But Derek Jacobi, and actually, I could see where Adrian was across from me. Yes, he was. He had a permanently a long queue, and Derek Jacobi did. I had a shorter queue. I kept signing throughout the day. Then me and Adrian went and did, we had to do some photos together with punters who had paid again like £40 to have their photo taken with us. Then we did it singly again. A lot more people had their photo, wanted to have their photo taken with Adrian rather than me. I'm fine with that. And then I came home about 6:00, quite a long day. That was nice. I think I was nice to everybody, you know. Yeah, and it was fine. I mean, it's the only one. I think the last one I did was like of those was about 20 years ago. I wouldn't want to do too many of them. But I didn't feel bad about myself, you know.
Yeah, good for you. What did most people want to talk to you about? Most of the fans.
Well, the photos that they wanted were either mostly Indiana Jones or Doctor Who, really, and the young ones. I think third, the young ones was kind of third. Quite four or five had got the 12-inch single of "Hello, John Got a New Motor," which they wanted signed. I mean, a lot of them are, I think, commercial. You know, they're people who get these signatures and then sell them on or trade them and stuff like that. So it's not, they're not all fans. Some of them are quite cynical, kind of dealers in signatures and signed photos and stuff like that. What do people want? People were excited to see me. I'm a kind of mythical figure a bit, aren't I? You know, I don't get out, you know. I don't do stuff really much. So some people have difficulty believing I exist. So they were excited to see that I was real. So I've done like a Gaza benefit Comic-Con.
The Olympia was actually completed in 1885.
Shit, really? Is that early? Oh, my God. Sure, the front is later then, isn't it?
Certain bits of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Oh, in 1930, the Empire Hall was added.
Yeah.
National Hall Annex was completed in 1923. But it was built in the style of exhibition halls from the Great Exhibition in 1851.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix played there in 1967.
Olympia.
Yeah.
Can't imagine the acoustics are very good.
Chris Eubank boxed against someone called Holmes in 1993 there.
Larry Holmes?
Maybe. Procol Harum? Isn't that white, a shade of pale?
That's right, yeah.
And RuPaul's Drag Race, Drag Con, happened there more recently in 2020.
It's a funny world. I mean, all the, you know, there's a world of also of, you know, that I was hired by some guy. I mean, he came to one of our podcast recordings, I don't know if you remember, and said, you know, do you ever do sign-ins?
Oh, yeah.
So that's where David came. So they're another kind of subset of the entertainment business is people who put on, you know. And again, yeah. I mean, I guess they, it's a kind of a gamble for them because they've got to sell enough photo signings to compensate for how much they've paid the celebrity, really.
They obviously, they probably book more than one person.
Yeah, well, he was certainly, this guy was doing David, he did Derek Jacobi as well and other people, I think.
So he's hedging his bets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Funny kind of, you know, no offense, but I wouldn't go to one of these and queue up for an autograph. I don't think that would be... But what no. I do like about it is like the dressing up and kind of paying homage to things you grew up with. There were these two guys who dressed up as Bottom. I don't know if you saw them.
They were there, were they? Yeah, I can't remember.
And they came and approached Aid, and they were in character pretending to be the Bottom guys.
Right. How did Aid react to that?
I saw a clip of it. Aid was very, oh, yes. Just acting very nice about it, of course. But they looked very convincing. But, yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's slightly, all that stuff's slightly unsettling. But it's fine. Shall we have some questions then? I think we've run out of things I've been doing.
Well, some of the comments on Paul Holden's episode, Locus Corrupti, from last week. Thanks, Alexi and Paul. Just ordered my copy. Few people saying they've ordered the copy, a couple of people saying they were in the middle of reading it when this episode came out. Richard said, Alexi and Talal should definitely do the audiobook for this. Talal can do the exposition parts and Alexi can do all the main character voices.
I think I got a bit confused with my Latin there. I think what I was actually thinking of was Corpus Belli, which is reason for war. But I said Locus Belli, which is would be place of war, which I don't know.
No, you said Locus Corrupti.
Well, then I said it's Locus Corrupti. I mean, Croydon, was the Kronx was Locus Corrupti. I think so. I think probably. And I'm surprised nobody remonstrated with me about my wonky Latin.
James says, as someone who's been in the military and whose dad was in the forces too when I was a kid, we really need to look at the manosphere that fetishizes weaponry and military crap, and is also the food source of this far-right surge. Socialism needs to explore why it doesn't appeal to the working man as it did historically. And then someone replied, what's socialism? That's interesting. Yeah, people look at like leftism and socialism as quite soft, don't they? Whereas back in the day...
Yeah.
It was like the workers, they were tough and they held tools. And they fought for the workers' rights. And
well, I don't know if there is, I mean, there isn't a kind of industrial, the proletariat, which is the term for the laboring masses, those involved in, those members of the working class who are involved in manufacture, you know, and sort of, you know, quite like steel making or.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of building, I guess. I mean, that they, to a great extent, no longer exist, really.
Well, yes, it doesn't help that they killed manufacturing in the UK. Yeah.
You know. So the working class is different now. But, I mean, they are still a working class. If you're, you know, you work in IT or, you know, Deliveroo ride or whatever, you're still really a member of the working class and your interests align with, other members of the working class, even though the media lies to you about, you know, who you should align with. But yeah, I mean, I guess there's that, I don't know, because you know, I fetishize military to a degree, really, so I'm doing it on the left. I think he makes a good point, I think.
And I've seen this lovely series of videos on Instagram to counter the right-wing flag-shagging protests of two guys who work in some sort of like depot or workshop or factory together. And one of them's white English and one of them's South Asian British. And they're both quite manly men. And the white guy is just saying, like, this guy's my brother. We work together. I see him as my equal. Like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, we actually work hard and I couldn't do my job without him. And it's like, they do this series of videos that's trying to, like, go against, you know, these twats.
Yeah.
And it's very effective to see it. And they're both quite butch factory workers or whatever, they work with their hands. I don't know what they do. But it's, there are people that does exist out there.
Yeah, I mean, and social, I mean, you know, in that socialism appeals to, as I was saying before, the majority of the voters, it must therefore appeal, you know, or have an appeal for the working class. So, you know, we shouldn't be, I don't know, you know. I mean, I think we certainly, we need, I don't know. I'm not feeling very articulate today. I will craft a reply to how socialism should appeal to male members of the working class, and I'll do it in Latin in iambic pentameters.
Please, it's the least you could do. Come on. Christian on the Patreon chat. Please, if you want to join the Patreon and support the show, it would mean a great deal, listeners. Wouldn't it, Alexei?
Yeah, it would. It mean everything.
It helps keep the show going. It is the sole source of any funding for this show. We don't want to ever have adverts on the show. Just go to patreon.com/AlexiSalePodcast and you can watch some exclusive content on there. What kind of exclusive content have we got on there, Alexei? Do you remember?
We got me at a shooting range.
You at a shooting range? Shooting
they got me talking to you.
Yeah.
What else have we got?
Oh, we've got all the video versions of this podcast.
Yeah.
All the video episodes. You've got you, yeah. Lisa, and Nigel watching The Young Ones. There's two episodes of that. Stuff like that. And there's also chat rooms where you can meet the community and everyone chats together and asks questions, and they are the first port of call when I want a question to ask Alexei. So please go to patreon.com/AlexiSalePodcast.
Please.
G asks, would Alexei agree that the earliest example of stunt casting was when they replaced the Major from Fawlty Towers with the Colonel from It Ain't Half Hot Mum on Lennon of the Rovers when the first actor passed? I was a regular in the audience and still think it's kind of, strangely, one of the funniest things ever.
Yeah, I don't know. It was, I mean, people, I didn't write it or anything. It was written by a guy called Marcus Berkman, and I think partly secretly by the producer, the late Harry Thompson. I've got.
I knew you told me that the Major was in it, but I didn't know the Colonel was in it.
I'd forgotten that. Yeah. So it was the Major from Fawlty Towers was replaced by the Colonel from A.R. Hot Mum. I remember. It's in my memoir when. Long before I was in show business, I used to drink in a pub called the Queen's Elm in Chelsea. And one of the cast of It Ain't Half Hot Mum was in there. And I was chatting to him for hours, just fascinated by his tales.
Never seen it. I've seen images of it. It's tremendously
racist.
Oh, is it?
Well, they've got a white guy playing the Indian... the Indian Punkawala, the guy that operates the fan.
Right.
And there's also a kind of, Mervyn Hayes plays a gay character, I think. There was also a film with, I think, John Cleese about a similar topic, which was at the same time, oddly, which is the story is about an enter party, a kind of a party of, men who entertain the troops but they're in the Burma theater. They're in the, you know, so they're fighting against the Japanese. And by accident, Windsor Davis, who was in Paris, Windsor Davis plays their sergeant major, who for some reason has accidentally been put in charge of this squad of kind of thespians. And so, you know, there's a mismatch there. And then they've got a very weak couple of officers, a colonel and I guess a lieutenant, but posh kind of upper class. So it's, I know that the there is one South Asian actor, I think, in it. But it's, you know, it's kind of dodgy from that point of view. I don't, but it's an interesting.
What is this, John?
Yeah, it's a good, you know, it's an interesting story. I'm trying to think. There was a film, I think it was a stage play originally, that was made into a film called Privates on Parade, which is about the same subject. And I remember seeing a bit of a, I think John Cleese was in it, and it was, although it's set in Malaysia or in Burma or somewhere, it was actually filmed all in it's funny the things that stick in your head, isn't it? It was all filmed in the UK, I think. And probably in the Botanical Gardens at Kew. But I remember John Cleese saying they were filming at night, and it was so cold that their breath was, you know, turning into moisture. So in order for that not to show on camera, they had to suck ice cubes before the camera turned over so that they didn't, so that their breath, you know, that it wasn't revealed to the audience that it was, although it was supposed to be in Burma, it was actually being filmed in sub-zero temperatures at Elstree or somewhere.
I was, don't know whether Privates on Parade.
Yeah. Who wrote that? Is it like Michael Frayn or somebody?
Peter Nichols,
okay.
Directed by Michael Blakemore, 1984. Produced by George Harrison. So what was the name of his...
Handmade films,
yeah. John Cleese, Dennis Quilley, Michael Elphick.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's got a similar look to the Ain't Half Hot Mama.
Yeah, it was the same storyline, effectively. You often... People have the same idea at the same time, don't they? You know.
In post-World War II Singapore... A British army captain recruits performers for a drag show.
Okay.
The members of a song and dance unit. Southeast Asia attempt to dodge Malayan communist bullets while falling in and out of love. What is that? What It Ain't Half Hot Mum is about?
No, Ain't Half Hot Mum was actually set, I think, in Burma during the war. But it's the same. It's not a drag show. It's a kind of variety show. Although, obviously... Because there were no women there, the female parts were played by males.
John Cleese is a bit of a fucking prick, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's what I always think, like, I mean, you know, he has obviously taken part in two works of absolute genius, which are Fawlty Towers and Monty Python.
Of course. But
I don't know why you would then go down that road of just turning into the same kind of angry old cunt as everybody else, really.
Yeah.
But there you go.
And openly declares his love for Israel. And
does he? I didn't know that.
He's just recently said he's going to go do a show there for free as soon as it's safe to do so.
Well, he's a... You know, I mean, it's like the banality of evil, you know, Hannah Arendt. It's also the banality of genius in a way. It's how somebody apparently so banal and dull can yet nevertheless come up with those extraordinarily powerful pieces of art. You know, it's a conundrum of human nature, really. And, he was always a tremendous prick, really.
I think he's pleased, just,
but yeah. And, you know, he has, you know, you go acknowledge he's made these two, or been a part of two extraordinary works of art.
Of course. Just brilliant physical presence, physical performer.
Yeah.
And a good writer, certainly. Certainly.
So
it's this free speech road that they go down.
Oh, yeah.
They get so scared of, or they become such big defenders of free speech that they... It, just because you believe in free speech doesn't mean you have to be a prick. Him, Ricky Gervais, Rowan Atkinson almost veered into that territory. I think dipped his toe in there. But it's free speech obviously is important, but so is people's well-being and people's feelings.
Yeah.
Like that matters.
I'm a fairly free speech fundamentalist. I agree with them. You know, like Chomsky, for instance, got a lot of earache. I think we talked about this before for... siding with a lot of right-wing authors like Salman Rushdie and stuff, saying, you know, free speech, you know, means listening to stuff that you consider objectionable.
Of course.
Mind you, There's just lots of stuff turned out about Chomsky's friendship with Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes, I was about to say, yeah.
Yeah.
That is really weird, isn't it?
Yeah. But nevertheless, you know, an amazing man, an amazing thinker, a Nobel Prize winner, let's not forget.
A couple of weeks ago, Alistair asks, I don't know why when you mentioned this, but he said, so good to hear Samuel Beckett mentioned.
Yes.
Are there any roles from Beckett that Alexei would love to play? I think he'd be, shall I continue? I think he'd be amazing as Crap in Crap's Last Tape. Or if he was to play Ham in Endgame, that would be great. Also, who would you pair up with if you did Waiting for Godot?
Yes, well, that's one of the celebrity kind of stunt castings is talking about. I remember having dinner with Steve Martin just after he'd done Waiting for Godot on Broadway with Robin Williams, and he was profoundly traumatized because Robin managed to keep it together for a couple of nights, and then he just started getting off the stage and going through women's handbags and that, and basically doing his stand-up act, and poor old Steve had to sit there in character while
Robin just
fucking did stuff. Yeah.
Oh no, that's and cocaine.
It really upset him. So, and of course, Rick and Aid were—I don't know if they did Waiting for Godot, but the whole basis of their act is really when they were at Manchester, they did a thing. What was it called? Life and Death or something on the toilet? Anyway, that was a kind of Beckett parody.
And all those bottom live shows where they're stuck on a desert island is very Godot, isn't it?
Yeah, they're just sat there,
you know, talking, filling time, basically, isn't it? Yeah. I never thought of that. That's very interesting.
No, I mean, Beckett is amazing, really. I mean, he's very much a one-off. I don't know who I would have. Who would I have? Because I did a sketch in the all-new Alexei Sayle show, I think, which we filmed down in Hastings, which is about Godot trying to get to his... Tried to get to the meeting. and, you know, having various adventures along the way, being picked up by a traveling salesman. And
that's brilliant.
Know, and then when he gets there, he's too late, you know, but...
Who wrote that sketch?
I wrote that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a very memorable one. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Come on, who would be your Godot partner? Who would be funny to see there? Does it tend to be so? Inform me. Do they tend to be two very opposing characters, or are they quite similar?
I've seen Waiting for Godot. I've seen Endgame. What was it? Crap's Last Tape with Michael Gambon and Lee Evans.
Okay. Where is he now?
Where is Lee Evans? I think he's sort of kind of retired. He's all got a bit much for him, I think. Who would I have? I would have as my sidekick Jordan Pickford, the Everton and England goalkeeper. I think that'd be an interesting casting. Me and Jordan Pickford.
Perfect.
Everton goalkeeper.
Perfect.
But yes, I was talking about Adorno, wasn't I, the philosopher, and he was a great admirer. And it is, I said that, you know, I mean, it's existential philosophy done as a play, really. Had a good war as well, was in the resistance, Samuel Beckett in France, lived in France.
And he was Irish, right?
Yes. Wrote in French, I think.
Mark, one of our top patrons, Mark, has informed the chat on Patreon that, oh no, not them, the American, never-before-seen American pilot of The Young Ones remake, Nigel Planer just dropped it on his Patreon.
Oh, really? Oh.
So in a rare turn, I'm going to promote someone else's Patreon.
Go check out
Nigel Planer's.
He's got a copy of it, has he?
Yeah. That's,
I mean,
wild.
That's all they kept. They just kept Nigel, didn't they? Didn't keep anybody else.
Yeah, which is really weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really stupid.
They could have got Tommy Chong or something to be American, you know. That's exciting. I might sign up just to watch that. Right, Alexi.
Yes.
Love you.
I love you too.
Thank you, everyone at home, for the well wishes. I'm getting better. Sayaska's a bastard. Lots of love for last week's episode. Oh, I'm just reading it now when we really should be ending the episode. So thanks for all the messages. Get on the Patreon.
Yeah.
What have you got exciting coming up this week, Alexi?
Me?
What's coming up? Yeah.
Nothing really. I'm just trying to finish this book, which I'll start heavily promoting it at some point soon, presumably. Oh, was that a thing? Brian Eno does these kind of soirees, really. And I was chatting to a young woman. She said, "Are you an economist?" And I said, "No, why?" She said, "I think I've seen a video in which you explain." So she thought from
your Marxist
the
video.
Marxist video, from my kind of stupid dancing, then an explaining of Marxist theory, and then stupid dancing. The idea she took from that was that I was an economist rather than a capering clown, which is charming.
That's flattering, yeah.
Yeah, sweet, yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, no, I'm not an economist. but I don't know what I've not got many. I don't think I've got any of those sort of things, really. Yeah, that's probably it now for the year. In terms of big, well, I've got the Paul Alden, Andrew Feinstein event in Birmingham. That should be
so
it.
You've got
really
lots of time to film more TikTok content, maybe. With
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Well, actually, I need to talk to also my publishers about what they think the right strategy is with those things, because obviously I want to start tying it into the book, which, I mean, will not be launched until kind of September next year, I think. But yeah. Actually, if the readers want to help me out, they could. I mean, I feel like I can't. One of the things that's sort of holding me up with doing that is I can't really think of. I don't know how to go about finding more pithy nuggets of Marxism. Really, if anybody's got any suggestions,
that's a good one. Yes, Alexi's run out of Marxism nuggets, so send in your suggestions. I was suggesting that you could do some nuggets on applying Marxism to the modern world or modern Britain,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like what it looks like.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Yeah, but it's just I'm neither an economist nor a political theorist, so
okay.
I have to really think hard to those nuggets that I did so far. Or, you know, just come from my brain. I didn't research them or anything. But, you know, to go further, I need to kind of.
All right, people at home, send in your script suggestions.
Yeah.
Okay, and while we're at it, if anyone has any marketing expertise and wants to help me widen the spread of this podcast, reach out. Maybe, Alexi, you know what? Maybe a nice winter bike ride could be on.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. Yeah, we could revive that, couldn't we, really?
We could even have you and a guest cycling side by side. Do you have any cyclist friends and they could show you some of their favorite spots or something? Have a think about that. Let's go. Time to go.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Alexi Sell podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkuti. Music by Tarboosh Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexiselpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.